You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
We're at Hendocks on a Monday evening, so it must be the Massive Report. Brought to you by 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping and remodeling or even building your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. We have Bart Logan, we have Mike Krosky, we have Alex Stanek, we have Sam Fahmy. We're all gathered around our little tables in the back room here at Hendocks. Someday you need to, I don't know, cross this off your bucket list to hang out with us on a Monday night. I tried to get some people to come out on the radio today, but it is, I'll give Mother Nature this. It is a really nice evening, and it's been a long wait for that. So that's okay. We'll carry on our own little group here in the back room at Hendocks. Crew one, revs nil. We got to break this down, which we will right now. I feel like, fellas, the Revs had a really good game plan, but they didn't have the people to execute that game plan to the degree that they needed, in that they didn't score any goals. They didn't look particularly dangerous. And as we'll hear from Coach Caleb Porter, that's by design, because defensively we are rugged and sound, whereas a lot of the league seems to be going defense. Yeah, okay, that's optional. So that's a good they zig, we zag. But how much should we be concerned, Mike, by the fact that the Revs had this game plan where they would push up and it was very effective, except that they didn't get the result that they wanted?
Well, I mean, I think from a defensive standpoint, I think it's less about what the Revs didn't do and what we didn't let them do. You know, and I really think that the back line, and you know, we're talking about the spine of the team. We talked about that last week. Having that back in place just shows how critical all those pieces are to this team being as stout as they are defensively. So I understand what you're saying. I don't even necessarily disagree. But I really think, you know, the Revs have a lot of firepower, as we mentioned. But when you have a defense that's so stout, and I think Stefan also kind of gets in people's heads a little bit, because
yeah.
I mean, he's hard to get by. You're going to take that extra step or move that extra way over to try and create that little bit of space because you're thinking a little bit. But overall, I give the credit to the Crew's defense.
Absolutely. Bart, by the way, it was good to see you as I was standing in the beer line.
Yeah,
it was, I don't know. You seem to know where to find me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just a wild guess there.
Yeah, we find ourselves with some beverages, and there we are. But, I mean, you're talking about, you know, rugged, and it doesn't get much more rugged than Josh Williams. I mean, not just as a player, but, you know, that rugged, manly face with that wonderful beard and smile.
Wow, we've already forgotten about Gaston, have we?
Oh, well, you know, I'm sorry,
wow,
Gaston.
You guys,
that's a good point, Bart. You were jumping on that
Gaston. Oh, yeah, but I've been on this Josh Williams one. I've been on this about the Josh Williams. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls.
It's like
we'll
that
talk
meme,
about it a little bit
you know,
more.
You
yeah.
got the guy looking at the new, you know, the, oh, the yeah, meme yeah. that's everywhere. You uh-huh. guys with Sorrow and Williams. Okay, yep. Go ahead, though. Williams had a great game.
I think it's great because he is one of those guys, especially when, from a fan standpoint. I mean, he is a fan favorite.
Sure.
And to see that and to see how much that goal meant for him.
Oh.
I think, I mean, just, you know, watching the replay again and, you know, the way he kisses that off as a noggin and then starts, you know, running instinctively forward and then realizing, wait, Nordek's in the other direction. Let me quick turn around, run his way over there.
He was coming right yeah. at me. And then he turned, and I'm like,
oh. It's
did
been
you
a
get
while.
Any good pictures of him doing that before he turned around?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you can see those on MassiveReport.com. Was he offside? That's the big discussion.
I don't think so. I think he was on. You got you get.
I don't know how you
attacker.
Tell. It was
yeah.
so close. It's too close to go to review.
Yeah.
I mean, Brad Friedel was bitching about it, which, you know, that's his job.
Yeah,
but
I am shocked.
In his accent, he was bitching about it.
I am shocked that Brad Friedel is blaming somebody other than himself for the problems that the New England Revolution are
it's
facing.
It's a bloody disgrace.
Yeah, it's really shocking to me. He never does that. So, it must just be a one-time thing for him there.
Well, there's a great breakdown of that goal on MassiveReport.com where you can really drill down and see how a club will, in a matter of just a few seconds, get the other team to expose their defense. But the players have to be ready to react to what they see. Not only Pipa striking the ball, but the guys in that mash of people. And they have to read what the defense is doing. I don't think the beautiful game gets enough credit for that. You know, in football, quarterbacks are, well, he has to read the defense. And, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on in those brains of people like Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson. But there are 11 guys that have to read the defense on a play like that that turned out to be literally the game-winning goal. And you have to – can you guys speak to what it is in a situation like that? What are you trying to get the opponent to show you in those few seconds when people start moving before the ball is struck?
Well, you know, from an offensive standpoint, you want to kind of go in different directions to make the defense think, obviously, you're going to go one way, right? And defenses even will act like they're going to man mark and then go into zone or vice versa. So it is a chess match, which is one of my favorite things about football, because that's what the whole game is. But in soccer, like you said, I think it's an overlooked aspect of the sport, because everybody thinks, well, it's just a fluid game constantly. It's like, no, there's certainly some chess going on mentally there. But, you know, I think from that goal standpoint, I thought the way they were able to pull the Revs out and really kind of expose them for or show what they were going to do was awesome. And the fact that – let's just talk about how – if you're going on a 10 scale, like we're judging diving or something or gymnastics, his flick on header is about as good as it's going to get.
Mm-hmm. The goalie was frozen.
Absolutely. He stood there and just watched, because there's nothing
right
that he could have done. I mean, flicked it perfectly, went bink off the post and in.
I mean, was the plan. I mean, you have plan A, B, C, right, and D for something like that. I don't think that the anticipation is that you're going to flick that into the far corner of the goal, that you're going to have people running on to that flick. And it wasn't needed. That's how perfect it was.
Right.
If Ibrahimovic would have scored that goal, it would have 250,000 views on the MLS Twitter account right now.
So right.
It would have been posted on all their social media channels and would have been, you know, trying to get on the SportsCenter top 10 or whatever. So
absolutely,
it was a great goal. I thought that we set out to, you know, accomplish something and we had a game plan going into it. I don't think Brad Friedel has figured out what the heck he's doing with that team yet. I'm not sure he ever is going to. But, you know, we went in there with a plan. We knew that they were going to press us. We worked around it. We got a set-piece goal, and then we got out of there with 3 points. So
that's the thing I like about – sorry to interrupt you, Brian. But that's the thing I love about Porter is that some coaches just go, this is our plan. I don't care who we play. We're going to trudge forward. Porter has a philosophy and an idea, but he's very meticulous with how he sees how we can take our game and what we – want to have an identity as from a team offensively and defensively, and how can we poke and prod whatever opposing team that we're playing to expose their weaknesses to enhance our strengths. And I think that does, or his staff deserves some credit for that.
And I just want to, you know, put a fine point on that point you were making, Alex. Josh Williams, not even on the bench for Team of the Week in MLS with a goal and keeping the clean sheet as a center back. And, of course, nowhere to be seen is Caleb Porter or anyone else from the, you know, or you know, Zach Steffen even, who's only got a shutout streak of 444 minutes, I believe, going on right now. This team, I hope, this team doesn't really, you know, or maybe takes after you've gone through, especially, and we were talking before the show with, you know, this team's really, you know, pretty familiar. It's a veteran team, and they've been through a lot more than, you know, most players that have ever played in any sports go through together with everything that was tied to last season. Will they stay? Will they go? So I don't know that, you know, snubs like that or anything like this is really, you know, bulletin board material for them at this point in their careers. And hopefully, especially with what Caleb Porter is trying to get them to start thinking about what they can do, because right now, still top of the table, this team is they're not scoring goals. They're not giving them up to. We saw that, though, a lot early last year, and that came back to bite us, and we had to, you know, fight in tooth and claw our way to, for this team to make it into the postseason. But you still have to be really encouraged with what you're seeing so far.
Absolutely. And a little breathing room, top of the table, and we'll go through the scores. One of the more shocking results was DC United lying on the ground. And we were neck and neck with them, and a little bit of breathing room between the Crew and DC United now. We'll go over the scores. We'll see how our opponent Montreal fared. And they actually have a match tomorrow night as well, which is a little strange against DC. So they're going to be at a bit of a disadvantage lineup-wise. Obviously, they're going to be home. It's supposed to be cold and wet here this weekend. I imagine it's going to be worse than that up in Montreal. So we seem to be okay at playing in the weather as well. I don't know. The match, the one thing, and we'll go over grades, but I don't know if you guys were – I spent a lot of time watching Robinho. And the thing that I loved about his game on Saturday was how much he was invested in defending. And especially in the first half, I was sitting in the south end. I love sitting in the south end because I can see everything building up and so forth. It's like watching the tide come in and go out. I was really impressed by how much work he was doing in the defensive end and how invested he was in that. I don't know if you guys noticed that. It's not something in his game that people are necessarily going to talk about, but I gave him a gold star for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen that work rate on both wings. I mean, Pedro Santos has certainly picked up his work rate defensively for sure. And obviously, you know, Robinho, we didn't know a whole lot about him coming in the season, but he's certainly done that too. So it's without question part of the duties of the wingers in Caleb Porter's system. And it is great because then, you know, that also gives the winger, or excuse me, the outside backs, that opportunity to get up into the field and understand that, hey, even if I push up, I know I can trust my winger to get back and cover for me, which isn't always the case for teams.
And he can sit back and still counter. Yeah. I think that's the thing that I really like about him, is that he's athletic enough and young enough and has good enough footwork that, you know, if they get the ball and there's a quick transition, he's up the pitch before you know it, and he's in position to, you know, create something. I've been really impressed with his not only his work rate, but also just his soccer IQ. I mean, he is in the right place at the right time, and he plays like a much older player would play.
He's very patient, too.
Yeah, so I picked him with the, before the season started to be kind of my rookie of the year almost, and a young player to watch, and I'm really impressed with what he's done so far. I think that you give him a season or two, and we're going to have a real talent on our hands.
Absolutely. I think, and I said this last week, if there's just one thing that I want to see better from him is just softer touches.
Yeah.
A lot of touches are a little hard from him. If he can clean that up, and he will with experience, I have no doubt that there's a player in there that could be a great producer for this club. Yeah, I don't recall his situation as far as with us, if he is he, you know, because you had a situation like with Santos, and I got to be honest with you. All this stuff gets very confusing with who is on loan and all this stuff. So please, anytime that I'm wrong in this stuff, please let me know, because it's really hard to keep track of. But he's a guy that I would definitely want to see in the program going forward, and not just a guy that's going to disappear in a year, because I think he fits in beautifully.
Yeah, this is not an Artur situation. They paid a transfer fee for him, so he's ours.
Okay, good.
So I don't know. I don't think the terms or the length was disclosed, but I would imagine he's here on a multi-year deal.
Okay. Yeah, it's probably like a three-year, I would guess.
Okay.
Yeah, and
that's good.
You know, a 24-year-old, and you have to think, though, if he, you know, continues to progress as he does this season, if he's, you know, able to bang in a couple goals, get a couple more assists, and then has another strong season at, you know, 24, 25, 26 years old, he also might be an attractive player that they might be able to capitalize on and sell and get a, you know, good price.
So we want him to be good, but not too good.
Yeah, like Stefan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, if we get, like, you know, the sweetheart, or at least they make it a little bit easier to, you know, say goodbye as we're listening to Cher over here. It just has me thinking about Zach Stefan. And I'm just...
Well, you know, generally with contracts like that, it's like it'll be a two-year deal with a team option for a third. Generally, is how those.
Well, I think he fits in beautifully. Also, you know, kudos to a guy that we talked about last week, and he's in a role where you don't talk about him a lot, you don't think about him a lot, but boy, are you glad you have him when you have a Hector Jimenez who can just step in for injured players and do the job that you need him to do.
It was really worrying when I thought he dislocated his wrist or something.
Oh, yeah, right.
Because I was...
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was like, oh, yeah, that would not be good.
Yeah, the way he was holding it and some pain, it was very evident, oh, boy, this is good. So when they just threw some tape on it and were like, all right, get back out there, that was a relief because I thought, oh, man, he could be out for a while if it's as bad as it could be.
He's a pro's pro, and he can play probably more positions in this system than any other player on our roster. And I'm not sure that you could find another player on another team who could play as many positions as he does. He can basically play on either side. He can play as a winger. He can play as a wing back. He can play as just a defensive back. I mean, you could probably play him as a central midfielder if you really wanted to. He can do so many things for you.
He's the baseball equivalent of a multi-tool.
Yeah, he's a utility infielder.
Everything but a striker and center back. I mean, he started playoff games at the 10 for this team.
Yeah.
I mean, at the Galaxy, when he came up through them, he was a center mid through and through.
Yeah.
And those are usually the guys that, as you get to higher levels, if you've played at a certain level and you go up and maybe they don't have everything that you need, they're exactly who you want to put on outside or outside back, whatever, because you know they're going to be comfortable on the ball and – you know, instead of having to worry about 360 degrees if they're on the outside, it really makes the game kind of slow down for them. So those are definitely the best guys to have.
And Harrison's out for a while.
Yeah.
It's looking like 3 months. So hopefully he won't wear down from – he's going to get way more minutes this year than probably he's used to. I'm sure he's up to it. But it's just – I'm so glad to have him.
I think it'll also be an interesting opportunity. Do we see any Connor Maloney during this stretch? He's going into, I believe, his third year with the team. It's kind of, you know, if he's got a future with this team, this is his opportunity. Obviously, he's got to work his way into the 18, let alone the starting 11, to really seize that. But I don't know that he'll get a better chance.
And we'll hand out our grades later. But I hate sitting in my seat in the 75th minute and going, I forgot Jossie Zardes was in this game. He was invisible until that one chance that went wide.
That was created by Hector Jimenez.
Yeah. It was frustrating. I always want more. I mean, obviously he's going to have his games where he's going to get a couple of goals, but he's again, to use, we talked about utility infielders. He's sort of like the power hitting number four hitter that strikes out three times a game and then hits you a home run.
He's the Adam Dunn of the crew.
why was he so invisible in this game? Can you point to anything in particular that made him a non-factor?
I think that it's almost a byproduct of the one-striker system to a certain degree. And when you play the formation that we play, sometimes you have games where your striker's on an island and you get one or two chances, and you either convert those or it's a nil-nil.
Were you saying that New England game plan for this and they were going to really mark him tight and keep him out of harm's way for them?
Well, I think it's partially that, and it's partially if you can just – prevent the midfielders from creating chances and getting him the ball in the first place, then he can't score if he can't get the ball.
Right.
So I don't think that there were a whole lot of chances that he had, but I also think that with Zardes, he is, and I mean I don't like to give him a hard time, but he is an MLS level striker who is not a DP. He's in the U.S. national team picture, but I don't think he's kind of the caliber that a Jozy Altidore would be. He, in a lot of ways, reminds me
Jozy
of... Jozy
Altidore?
Well, I would take Jozy in his prime over Zardes in his prime. I think that this is just kind of the game that we're going to get from Zardes.
Okay.
And we kind of either have to deal with it or we have to look for other options.
That's a hard option to find. Yeah. You're not going to find strikers out there just floating around.
Yeah. I mean, they're expensive, and you usually have to use a DP spot on them. But there are a lot of teams in this league now that are going overseas to get these strikers, and I think at a certain point that may be something that we have to consider, or we need somebody else at least to really push him for his spot, because, you know, we've talked about it a lot on here over the years. We typically have had a single striker, and then we've had a bunch of other people who can't really push them. And so if you have a guy like Zardes who does hit a slump, he's still going to have to start because the other options are even worse.
Do you think, how much of this do you think has to do with, if any, Caleb Porter versus Greg Berhalter? Obviously, you know, Greg Berhalter and Josh Wolf as well were seen as kind of the striker whispers. And you look at the season they got out of Kai, you look at the season they got out of Ola Kamara, and then you see what they've gotten out of Jossie Zardes, and especially compared to, you know, what he put up the years prior in LA, with the exception of his one big year. But he's still, I mean, still being productive, at
sure.
least on the whole. It's early
sure.
in the season.
Sure.
I mean, do you think we're going to see a significant dip here?
Well, okay, so one thing that you saw with Caleb Porter in Portland was this. Either Adi, it seemed like anyway, he would score two goals or score nothing for games and games and games, and he'd score two. And, you know, he would be hot for a little while, then Porter would take him out, start Urruti for a little while, and then to be back and forth. Who could catch fire? Now, we don't really have a Urruti-type guy to come and be that player, but in this system, it's, yes, of course, goals are going to be important from your striker, duh, right? But the biggest thing is for what Zardes needs to do is to draw defenders away from the wingers, from the likes of Higuain, things like that, and his job is to poke in goals inside from the PK spot and up.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to collect the ball at the top of the 18 and strike. That's not what that role's for, and that is perfectly suited for him because, as we talked about prior to the show, he doesn't have that ability. So I think it's a patience game, and I think Porter understands it because he saw it, and ultimately became pretty successful. My concern, and I know this might sound kind of silly, I want to see goals from Higuain. Doesn't have to be all the time, but in Porter's system, we saw how well Valeri did in that role. You know, he was MVP one season, and he scored goals. And they're similar players. I know Higuain's a few years older. He still has that ability to score. So if he can pop in a few here and there, it'll take the spotlight off of Zardes.
One thing that I think it would be interesting to try, and I wonder if they've given this a shot in training, but I would be tempted to slot in Justin Merrim at left wing and give Rubinho a shot up top.
Oh.
I think that he has similar attributes to Zardes, but a little bit more pace and not quite as physical. I think that it would be an interesting
shot. Can you
play
them together?
Shot.
Can you like readjust and
yeah,
one and two?
Yeah, I mean, you could do something like a 4-4-2, but then I'm not sure where you put Higuain.
Yeah. Okay.
So it gets a little bit tricky when you go into two striker formations.
Yeah.
You could play some sort of a midfield diamond.
Diamond.
But then you're down to one defensive mid, and I'm not sure that our defense would be quite as strong if you did that. So there are options available if Zardes doesn't produce. He had a couple seasons where he has kind of, they look like blips when you look at his career stats. But this could also be, you know, just a couple games early on in the season and he catches fire later on.
Yeah.
We need to get him the ball more, though.
Yeah.
And that may be tough to do.
That's really, that's at the end of the day, when I'm sitting there in the 75th minute, I'm talking to my wife going, gee, Jossie just really hasn't touched the ball at all tonight. And I haven't thought about him once. And I want to see him touch the ball more. And if he could be more into the flow of the game, I think that would be a positive. I'm not panicking about it or anything like that. I mean, the results have been there.
Yeah.
And certainly he's gotten on the score sheet this year. So in the grand scheme of things, I don't think it's a big deal yet, but it's just a little like eyebrow raising when you see a game like that where he's just not there for whatever reason.
Yeah. When your top goal scorers, a lot of them are defenders, that's always kind of a red flag.
We have to lead the league in goals by central defenders.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Well, probably did last year, too. I mean, Jonathan Mensah had 3-4 last
yeah.
year, I think. Josh Williams had a few. Who's keeping count? I don't know. But, I mean, it's...
There's got to be an award for that, doesn't there?
I think
central
there should
defender
be.
Goal,
yeah.
goal scorer.
Goal,
they got to
yeah,
name it after somebody. Who would we name it after?
Chad Marshall.
Oh, yeah, there
I mean,
you go.
Chad Marshall
well, he's still
was,
playing.
Yeah,
you can't name
true.
An award after a guy who's still playing. That's...
Yeah.
he's had 9 shots in 5 games. So that's never a good sign. He's got 3 goals in those 9 shots.
Yeah.
So if you can just get him the ball more, that conversion rate's not horrible. He's just got to get the ball.
And that's what I mean. That's his job in that role, is to finish the few chances that he gets. In that role, he's going to be more of a poacher and a decoy for the attacking mid and wingers to create opportunities. That's not, again, I see what you're saying, but my thought going into the season, if people thought he's going to have another 16, 18 goal season like last year, you'd be sorely mistaken. I think this is actually playing out the way it should. I mean, if he stays on this pace, he's still, you know, well into the double digits.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I think 10, 12 goals. I think, and again, when you look at least, you know, what he'd been putting up prior to coming to Columbus, I think you'd be thrilled to get 10, 12. And I think they're most teams in MLS are thrilled to get 10, 12 goals out of their strikers. I know, DC would have loved to have, not DC, but David Akam, they would have loved to have gotten something like that out of him for the last few seasons combined. This is a guy who, you know, had scored all of 2 goals last season making DP dollars. But I agree with you too, and his importance there is that decoy. And even though those goals aren't coming from Pepe Higuain yet, at least I'm comfortable hearing, you know, Caleb Porter is just gushing about Frederico Higuain. And I think that's a good sign when he's saying things like, you know, he's got many more years to left to play for on my team, than kind of laying his own claim to Pepe as well, and that he wouldn't be letting him go. I think especially when you look at, you know, the situations and the kind of, you know, bit of drama that had been surrounding Frederico Higuain's future last year and in a couple prior years.
Yeah. All right, well, I think we've parsed that out enough, but we'll hand out our official grades next year at the Massive Report. We've got the numbers, and we'll see from MassiveReport.com how much our panel agrees with those numbers as we hand out the grades next. We'll be right back on the Massive Report, live from Hendox on High Street.
And his staff did an excellent job. They were up for it mentally, and they gave us some problems by pressing us. But I thought, again, we wore them down in the second half. They had very little. And really, when you look at it, with all the crosses and all the set pieces they had and all the direct balls that they launched in, really, Zach didn't have much to do today. And I think that's a credit to our back line, because they had 4 or 5 guys in that line that they had to deal with all game long and deal with, you know, first balls and deal with crosses and deal with set pieces. And I thought the entire back four, they were men. They were excellent. And specifically, I thought our outside backs today, Hector and Waylon, was, for me, two of the best performances of the day. And obviously great to see Josh chip in on a set-piece goal. So now you know it's not just Gaston that can score those. It's our other center backs, too.
Coach Caleb Porter, the well-dressed Caleb Porter. He was wearing a suit. Brad Friedel was wearing a track suit. Maybe that was part of the problem. I don't know. I'm not a dresser, but I did notice that. It's like, is this practice or, you know, are we at the game here, Brad? But great comments from the coach, who recognizes that his back line, his defense is certainly carrying the day as your Columbus Crew SC defeat New England on Saturday night at Moffett Stadium. A lovely evening. 1-0. The attendance was disappointing. Maybe we'll touch on that very briefly and then move along, because I think it will take care of itself in due time. That's my theory. They are in the front office trying to rebuild from being torn down to the studs, and they are working their way towards the new stadium. And I think that as this team has more success and they hire more people and get out into the community, that will take care of itself. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
We've seen the trend, and they know it, and that's why it was so insidious last year when this front office put and gave us the schedule that they put together, because they know what the trends are in terms of the actual scheduling and when people start coming to these games. It's getting, once it gets into summer, and I'd venture to say it's probably around the same seasonality trends everywhere else in MLS.
Sure.
But these March and April games, and when you're getting, you know, 4 games within the first, you know, 2 months, 4 or 5 games within the first 2 months, it's not going to have a lot of people.
You want to bring the families with the players out. My daughter has a tournament, the Nike Cup this weekend. The tournaments are starting to build up. You're going here and there and everywhere, and that's you're busy until the end of May with that. So it's a whole host of issues that I think will take care of themselves. I'll tell you what. I go to the game. You know, I'm noticing what everybody else has noticed, that the everything from bathroom stalls and the banners and how the outside of the stadium looks. But the one thing I noticed that I really appreciated was when we were leaving, we were going to the Big Room Bar at CD125 to see a show. So we went out the south end on 17th to go down Summit. There was cops all the way down to Greek Row on campus just to make sure the traffic flowed correctly. There was nothing else going on in the neighborhood.
You didn't see that back in the day.
You did not see that back in the day.
Anybody else notice the digital signage at the gates?
Yeah.
Every gate now has a digital sign that says, like, parking costs and has arrows.
Yeah.
Wow.
There were more cops directing traffic on the way in and then on the way out. And I saw my last cop, and I looked to my left, and there was one of the frat houses on my left. It's like, that's... And it wasn't a huge crowd, but they made sure that if there was a traffic problem, that these guys could keep moving, keep the traffic moving. They got to pay for that. So it was much appreciated on my part.
And you know, I haven't ever done this personally, but I know people that will, you know, go to the tailgates before the game, and they will grab a beer, you know, as they're leaving to walk into the stadium, because they know that they'll have time to finish that beer in the parking lot and while they're waiting in line before they get up to get through and actually, you know, get in. And this week, I'm told that people couldn't do that, and they had to walk to further gates in order to finish their beers. Now, me, again, not like that. I've never touched this stuff, but I hear. This is what I hear from people.
Yeah, well, I saw more porta potties out in the parking lot. Just well done. These things, in my mind, are going to take care of themselves. They have a long term.
Bart, what's
plan.
In your right hand right now?
Nothing.
It's an apple
water.
Juice.
Yeah.
But in all seriousness, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Montreal Impact fan earlier this week, and she was asking me when the season starts for the Impact.
Oh, wow.
I had to tell her that they had already played four games.
Started.
Yeah,
they already lost a game 7-1.
So
maybe the season hasn't started.
This is not a Columbus thing. This is a league-wide issue. I don't think that it's helped by the fact that half of the teams, or more than half of the teams, make the playoffs, and that the teams that they market are, you can count them on one hand, and they're already teams that are doing very, very well. I think that MLS bears some of the responsibility for this, but I agree with you guys. This is all going to work itself out. They are staffing up like crazy. They haven't even owned the team for 6 months yet. It's going to take some time, but they'll, you know, get staffed up. The city's going to be completely behind them. The sponsorship money's already there, so I don't think people should sweat it. It's going to be fine.
If you're looking for a work in, like, sales or something, then now's the time to jump on. They get your resume together.
Yeah, they have some openings I saw.
Sure.
Real quick, so your friend that's a Montreal fan?
Yes.
Does she attend games very often?
Yes, she does. They go fairly often. So the thing about Montreal is that a lot of the games in the beginning part of the season are played at Olympic Stadium rather than Stade Saputo.
That old barn.
Why is that anyway?
Because it's so cold in Montreal
beginning
part of the season that nobody shows up if they play it outdoors. So I think a lot of fans kind of skip the early games just for that reason, and it doesn't get as much attention. I'm not sure if they were playing them at Saputo or not, but usually Montreal fans are kind of a finicky bunch.
Somebody look up where we're playing on Saturday.
I'm pretty sure it's at Saputo.
Sure. Is it at Saputo?
Yeah.
They're playing outside.
So,
all right.
You know, and then on top of that, I think there's a couple of things. So for whatever the reason, it seems that there's a very loud but relatively small passionate group. You know, season tickets are close to 9,000,
which is good,
a nice bump up. What the issue is right now is, how do they get the casual fan to come to the early games? And again, that has been a problem for since I can remember, even when I lived here before 10 years ago, right? So how can they do that? And obviously, I know with what I don't even want to say his name, what that guy did as the owner, to kind of turn a lot, you know, businesses, turn off the casual fan, all that kind of stuff. Yes, it's going to take time to rebuild. What I believe will happen, because I know that there's a strong soccer market here, right? What I think is going to happen is what you saw in Kansas City. When they rebranded and moved into that stadium, because, you know, they were playing first at Arrowhead, which nobody went to games, and then they were playing at that dumpy minor league baseball field that held like 8,000-9,000 fans, right? But now they sell out the high majority of their games.
It's a beautiful park.
And it's a whole, it's a real event now
when in
that city, right? So I think you're going to see that too. And yeah, it is going to take time for sure.
Sure. So we need to enjoy our quirky little park.
Yes.
For what it is while it's here. And as we were talking before we started the podcast, we're hoping that there will be a program whereby we can buy rows of seats to put in our house from our beloved former Crew Stadium, our Mafre Stadium, our quirky little Erector set. But those days will soon
the
be...
The tiny demon fortress.
Yes. It's all going to work out. So let's move along from that. Let's go to our player ratings. I'm going to give you the score as it stands on MassiveReport.com, and we'll go around the panel and see if you agree, disagree, want to bump somebody up, want to drive somebody down. That's up to you. We're going to start with the goalie, Zach Steffen, who got a 7 on the side. Mike?
I'm going to go 7.5.
Okay.
He wasn't overly busy, which isn't a bad thing, but he made the saves
he was
supposed
save.
To make. Yeah, and that one in particular was phenomenal.
Yep.
So, you know, you don't give him a 9 or 10 just because they got a shutout.
Sure.
Yeah, he wasn't that busy, but I think 7.5 is solid.
I'm fine with 7.
Okay. Mark?
8's good for me.
Okay, 8. Anything in particular that gives him a full
444 consecutive minutes? He's still, you made every save, and I think that gets you at least.
How about his kit? You know, I felt like the two goalies got together and decided that they were going with fruit flavors, like some sort of like Starburst look, because they both had I was trying to decide with my wife what color that was that Zach was wearing.
Is it the raspberry Starburst?
Sort of a peach kind of raspberry. Yeah, I don't know. A flavor not found, or a color not found in nature, but, you know, very bright and springy. How about that? So I'm going to, you know, bump him up to a 7.5 based on his kit.
That's fair.
Hector Jimenez gets a 6.5. I feel like he should be graded on a different scale, though, because he has to prepare for so many different eventualities during the season. So, you guys give him a score. We'll see how you guys.
I'm gonna go 7.
Okay.
Again, very solid. Nothing of noteworthy, you know, negatively, which is what you want for a guy who's kind of being thrust in there. I think a solid 7.
I'm gonna say 6.5. I thought he did well.
I'll stick with the 7, just again giving him that extra bump for not only, you know, filling in admirably, but also that great opportunity that, again, Giassi Zardes was unable to capitalize on. But he did everything that you could ask from him.
Jonathan, 7 on the site, MassiveReport.com.
I can roll with that.
Okay.
Solid. Helped lock down the shutout.
Okay.
Yeah, 7.
7's good for me.
Josh Williams, the goal scorer from what town is he from in Ohio?
Hinkley.
It's up there, Cleveland, right?
Yeah, I love seeing the OHIO when the guys from this state play. It's just, you know, those seeds were planted so many years ago, and to see them take root and grow up and become a part of the club, it's extra fun, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, the tide of the community is always I wish every team had, because I'd be curious to see how many teams don't have players from the state that they represent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So an 8 on the site, Mike?
The goal was great. I'm going to get a little Ralph here. I'm going to go a 7.
Why?
I don't want to overdo the goal. Yes, it was great. Just like I said, awesome goal.
Yeah.
But the overall game, I'll go a 7.
All right.
He would have a million views on Instagram if that had been a Zlatan Ibrahimovic goal, so I'm giving him an 8.5.
Whoa.
And I gave a 10 for Saro for a solid defensive performance and a goal. So I feel like 8.5, that's
more
where
than
I'm going to go.
Fair for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I also gave a 10 to Gaston Saro for a solid defensive performance of the clean sheet and a goal. And I'm giving a perfect 10
wow.
to Josh Williams.
Oh, right.
Bart's the anti-Ralph.
Love it. There we go.
Love it. Whalen gets an 8 on the site.
I don't know about that. I would go.
That's what it says.
I'd go 6.5, 7. He was fine.
All right.
I'm going to give him a 7.5.
Okay.
I like the 8 score, and I think Nick brings up great points. This was one of his better defensive performances. He was all over that side. I think he led the team in tackles and clearances. I mean, he had a couple good ones, so I like 8 there for Waylon Francis. And really encouraged to see him hopefully kind of get into that comfort level, and if he can start really elevating his game and putting those sort of performances together, a string of those, that's going to be incredibly important for this team.
And when he joined in the early games, you kind of saw a little bit of communication issue with him and the other defenders and the midfielders. That's basically been solved at this point in the season, so that's really good to see going forward.
Yeah, it seems like he's kind of maybe held back a little bit more. He was really getting up in those first couple games, and maybe Caleb Porter sat him down and said, no, we need to take care of this third of the pitch first and then let you go up on the way. But he's been, I think he's been really solid these last few weeks.
Our tour, I love saying it, 6. Well, I don't love saying a 6, but I love saying our tour. 6.
6.5. Again, solid. I don't recall him connecting a ton of really, dangerous passes because he's kind of that link, from the defensive side through the forward or through the offensive attack. I thought he's fine. I'll give him 6.5.
All right.
I thought he was okay. 6.
6 is good.
Will Trapp gets a 7. Agree, disagree?
Yeah, I think 7's pretty spot on.
Him jump up, though, in the second half, just jump up and deliver that cross. You guys remember that?
I don't recall it all.
Oh, I was so excited. I was wishing my daughters were there with me because they would have been equally as excited. It happened. Man. Go back and watch the tape.
I'm gonna give him a 7. All yeah, right. I think so. I'm comfortable with 7.
It was a good cross.
Will gets a 7.5 for me because I have to just give him a higher score than everyone else.
it's the anti-Ralph.
Yes.
All right, I'm going to stop.
Everyone else graded on a higher one except Pedro Sanchez, who's now graded on the same one as everyone else. He earned it.
All right, so here's what Sam told me, and he has pictures to prove it, as the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones song goes. You were telling me about Will after the game. A young lady was holding up a sign going, I skipped my prom to see you play. And Will gave her his jersey and autographed it and autographed her sign. Is that not correct,
absolutely
Sam?
Absolutely deserves a half point for that.
I'm at giving least. Him a 9.5 for that.
Yes.
Well done.
I'll bump him up a half point for that.
Bunch of softies around here.
That's awesome.
No, that is great. Yeah, she was really excited. That's what you should have had your daughters do.
My daughters are not there. It was just – but. I enjoyed the cross, and I enjoyed the story. So Will Trapp gets a 9.5 from me. I don't care what you guys think. Pedro gets a 7.
I want to start with Bart. Can you give us the Pedro Santos curve here?
He's great. He's graded on the curve with everyone else now. So I would say probably a 7.5. He was pushing. He created a couple nice chances there. Really, like the work with Higuain and the chemistry, it's what we saw the little glimpses of right when he came over, and then it was gone all last year. And now it's coming together each game more and more. I'm excited.
Yeah, I think he's putting it together. I'm gonna say 7.5.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I love the fire that we're seeing out of him now.
Yeah.
Like we are seeing a real energy and edge to his game, and that's what you need.
Pipa gets an 8.
8.5. I mean, his passes were just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Every game it seems like every time he touches the ball, it's a dangerous pass. Outside of those little cheeky things that we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, Philadelphia, right?
Yeah.
The back heel thing, I saw one that was completely blind.
Yeah.
And
nobody was even close, so I deduct a little bit on that. But, I mean, he made up for it, and then that pass that he just slotted right through the outside back and the center back. Do you guys remember that? It was like a 35-yard pass.
Yeah.
Right onto the on-running Santos. Oh, my gosh. Beautiful.
So I'm going to bump Josh Williams up to a 9 because I don't want to give an Higuain a higher grade than I'm giving Josh Williams. Because I'm going to give Higuain a 9.
All right.
I think that his performance was great, but he tied the assist record for this club. And his post-match comments, if you haven't had a chance to listen to them, go on the Crew Twitter account and find them. He is all about the club, all about his teammates, all about the system. And it was the most selfless interview I've ever seen for a guy who just hit a milestone. And that culture is going to, you know, get into those young players and carry on into well after he's retired. He lives and breathes this team, and he does it in the absolute best way possible. I mean, if you go back, and I hate to bring this up again, but you go back to the whole Kai Kamara thing, 4 years ago, however long ago
it's
that
Montreal.
Was.
It's Montreal.
Where you had this whole thing about, you know, okay, who's going to take the penalty? And Kai made it all about himself. Pipa is the antithesis of that. He is all about, you know, whatever is going to help get Columbus 3 points. And I love what he does on the pitch. I love even more what he does off it, so 9.
There's a reason why Kamara bounces from team to team.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can we sing the Where in the World is Kai Kamara?
Seriously.
I'm pretty sure once he gets his next team, the next one after that is free. If you just punch all the cards.
You know, MLS is going to have to continually expand into the infinite universe in order to accommodate the amount of teams that Kai Kamara has to play for. Because no one could stand him.
He was in Cincinnati for, 30 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was. Stanek's favorite team.
FC Minot, North Dakota. That's coming for you, Kai Kamara. All right. Robinho, a 7.
So I'll give a 7.5. Just work rate.
I agree. We talked about this earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pound my fist into the table here at Hendox and give Robinho an 8. I'm not giving grades for everyone because that's you guys' job, but I loved how hard he was working. Mm-hmm. I noticed.
Yeah, he's a fighter, and I think you need guys like that who are just, you know, really not satisfied with whatever is on the scoreboard. We could be winning 4-0, and I feel like Rubinho's the kind of guy who's going to be sprinting to the ball to try to make it 5. I really like him as a player. I think he's going to be great for our club, and so I'm gonna agree with you and give him an 8.
Yes.
Led the team in shots, I think, too.
Yeah.
I believe he had 3, so yeah, 8 for Rubinho.
All right, we spent a lot of time in this already, so we'll just reiterate that Joss, you got a 5.
Yeah, 5.5, 6, fine by me.
All right.
For the reasons we spoke of.
All right.
5. He needs to convert chances, and, I mean, if he's not getting chances, he needs to drop back and receive the ball.
Fair enough.
5.5.
And Coach Caleb Porter gets an 8.
Yeah, I mean, they weathered the storm of a very physical team, a tough team. And
big team.
Yeah, big, very physical team. And, you know, again, a team that has some real talent on paper. Don't know if Friedel's the guy to get them where they want to go. So Caleb had them ready to go.
I'm going to give a 7.5. I thought that we played well and we got the result, which is the most important thing. But there were times during that game where I was really worried that we were going to concede. And so, you know, I thought we had trouble. Even when we went down a man, it didn't feel like we went – or they went down a man. It didn't feel like it was 10v11. Yeah. It felt like it was still 11v11. That made me a little bit concerned. So I 7.5 because we got the result. But,
yeah,
it could have been cleaner.
I'm in the same place. That's where I knock them off. It's when, you know, when they went up a man and you're at home, you know, you've got those fans. You don't really – you're playing for the result, but it's also about the process. And I think I'd like to see them. He's talked about ruthless acceleration, wanting to see that ruthlessness. You've got a team that's, you know, in all sorts right now, that's down a man. You're in front of your home fans. I want to see you just step on their neck. And I didn't really see that from them.
I agree. And I'll tell you, over my lifetime of watching this game, I always get concerned when my club, the Columbus Crew, or anybody that you're pulling for, regardless of your team, when you go up a man, there are two things that can happen. And a lot of times you see just backing off. You can go for the kill or you can – and I felt like they didn't go for the kill. And that's what you need to do. in a way that makes sense. I mean, you don't want to leave yourself exposed, but I felt like I agree. We just sort of kept doing what we were doing, and we did the job, and that's fine, but especially in front of your home fans, I would like to see a little more going for the jugular when...
I think
not to be violent, but you know, going for the kill when they're down a man. You know?
Yeah, I think what the way the Revolution responded, I thought was actually terrific when they went down a man, and I think it may have surprised the crew a little bit because the way they went into blocks, meaning the Revolution, they were spaced out perfectly to cause enough problems to keep the crew from being able to do those things.
Okay.
I think it may have caught them off guard a little
bit. Okay. Well, those are little things, and we've handed out our grades. And overall, the big thing is a 1-0 victory.
Yes.
We're going to Montreal on Saturday, a 1 p.m. kickoff, which is kind of weird. Do they do that often up there? Is that their thing?
Yeah, for whatever the reason, Montreal and Toronto play in the weirdest times. Like, Toronto plays on Sundays a lot, which is weird. I don't know that. And Fridays. They rarely play home Saturday games.
It's got to be a Canadian thing. TV? Is that what it is?
What, like
because
hockey
of hockey?
But, I mean, you got to finish up so
everyone
can
be tuned.
Hey,
the Canadians aren't in the playoffs.
Well, they're watching hockey night in Canada. Yeah. I mean, they got to watch Toronto. You know, that's got the entire
all
nation.
All right there, eh? All right, at any rate, we need to be ready to play at 1 p.m. up in Montreal. We'll preview the game next. We'll also go over the score lines. A few eyebrow raisers, including DC United. We'll get to those next on the Massive Report from Hendox on High Street. It is the Massive Report here at Hendox. We're here every Monday. Why not come hang out? There's a pool table near us, but you're not allowed to use it while we're recording. But after, feel free. Are they going to start making food back there? They just turned on the lights in the kitchen. Uh-oh.
Just for us.
Yep. Uh-oh.
Yes, they are.
All right. Post-show meal. I love it. Hey, Bart, you got to get your word in about your bag.
That's right, Brian. The segment three is brought to you by, as always, the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Who is the man of the match? What April Fool's jokes would you play on Giassi's artist? How do you make your mustache curl just right? Find out the answers to these and more questions this week's Drunken Cruiser postgame show exclusively on GCG Bag TV. Visit us on YouTube or check us out on Twitter or Facebook at GCG Bag 96 to watch that videos. The Drunken Cruiser postgame show has instant reactions and thoughtful commentary from fans who are often just as drunk as our intrepid reporter. The Drunken Cruiser postgame show brought to you by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing.
Are you sure that you weren't in the beer line and I was outside the beer line when we ran into each other on Saturday?
I will not comment.
All right, fair enough. The MLS schedule bled into Friday, where at Galaxy beat Vancouver 2-0. No comments on that or nothing? Who cares?
I don't care.
All right.
We'll move along. That's right.
New York City FC, FC, DC, whatever, you know, the Nazi club, they tied Montreal 0-0.
0-0, what a snoozer. Just move on from that.
That was at Yankee Stadium. How can you not score at Yankee Stadium?
I know, it's like the size of this room.
Was that, I saw replays or just some, like, videos from, I think it was that game where the pitch was literally, like, yards of it were coming up.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It's pathetic. That
it is.
That setup is pathetic.
That's not going
to
work.
It's never going to change. People need to just understand that they are never going to be able to afford a soccer stadium ever in New York City. It is never going to happen ever.
Somebody's going to blow
their knee out. My grandchildren will be complaining about that.
And I just don't think the whole soccer-specific stadium is something that MLS is really all in on. We'll probably talk about that a bit later.
I don't know, but if they don't put it in Manhattan, I mean, what are you going to do? They said that they wanted to be in the city. So,
hence the name.
You know, if you walk around Manhattan, I don't see any soccer field-sized areas, so I don't know what they're going to do. You know what? That's not our problem. LAFC 4, DC United 0. A shocker.
Well, you know, Wayne Rooney got the red card.
Wow.
It wasn't about the 52nd minute or so. I think Diego Rossi had a hat trick, if my memory serves me right. Yeah, that was a bloodbath. I mean, that just shows LAFC is no joke because DC's been pretty good this year. You know, they had a little shutout streak going on for a number of games, but LAFC is the real deal.
You know that LAFC are a respected team by this league and a team that's marketed by this league when they actually give cards to Wayne Rooney. I was really surprised. There are only about three teams in this league that Wayne Rooney can go studs up on and will get a red card. So congratulations, LAFC. You are still one of Don Garber's favorite baby teams. Wow. I have no other comments on that game. I hate both teams.
Toronto 2, Chicago 2, but the big news, they are rebranding, allegedly, the Chicago Fire and moving them back into Soldier Field, which is, again, that is not part of the MLS business plan. They're going to abandon their soccer-specific stadium in Springfield, Illinois. And
Bridgeview.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought they were in the state capital.
Yeah.
They'll always be the Bridgeview Fire.
It may as well be in Springfield. Have you guys ever been there?
No, I have not.
Bridgeview.
Yeah, Bridgeview.
Yeah.
How far away? Give me some context.
It's
map-wise. Probably
here to Crew Stadium to Canal Winchester.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not working for them, obviously.
No.
I think it would work better if they were good and they finally thrown their hands in the air. Why do they have to change the name of the team, though?
Yeah, I don't understand that. I don't know if it's because...
The CBS drama series, Chicago Fire?
That's honestly what I was thinking, because when you Google it, that's what shows up.
Don't buy it. See, who is Googling, the Chicago Fire, knowing it's a soccer team and being like, well, wait, there's a television show. Well, now I'm not going to be able to... I can't look it up. I can't find tickets. I can't buy tickets now. This is a TV show.
Where's Bridgeview?
It's back in the day.
It matters. It's not hard to fix that stuff, too.
I like the name. I hope they keep it. Yeah. I think Chicago Fire is a cool name.
I think it's always been weird to name sports teams after regional disasters that killed a bunch of people.
Yeah.
From that standpoint, it's kind of weird.
You got a point there.
I did hear...
San Jose earthquakes. Not quite, but...
I did hear that the Twitter handle for Chicago City FC has been obtained by Crew fans. So I'm not saying who.
Is it anyone at this table?
I can't comment on that. What I can comment on is that someone at this table may have had possession of it and then passed it to someone else. And if I told you who had the possession of the handle now, you would all laugh. But so if you go to @ChicagoCityFC.com.
That is hilarious. Did you also grab the Twitter handle and so forth?
Oh, this is fantastic.
They're going to get...
Instagram?
We just grabbed the... whoever did it just grabbed the Twitter handle. I don't think that's what the actual name is going to be, so we might actually be able to keep it. But I'm sure if they do have a team, then they're just going to call Twitter and get the handle removed. But until then, we're going to have some fun.
That seems to be what makes the most sense, is that they're going to rebrand as some sort of FC Chicago or something like that. But Soldier Field is not a long-term solution to their issues.
I think the only condition they should be permitted to do this is if they have to rehire Dave Greeley to run the team through this rebrand and relocation back to Soldier Field.
Seeing 10,000 people in Soldier Field for a Chicago Fire game is going to be pretty brutal.
Well, they could play at Guaranteed Rate Field when the White Sox aren't there. It works for the NYCFC folks playing on a ballpark. Minnesota 2 and Red Bulls 1.
I didn't see that.
That's a good result for us, though, huh?
Yeah.
Orlando 4, Colorado 3.
That was a fun one. Anybody watch that?
No.
Oh, that was a fun
one. I saw Nani was getting into a little something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a typical thing that happens with DPs. Is Nani headbutted a guy twice and did not get a red card. So, typical Major League Soccer.
Philly 2 and Dallas 1. Philly with another win.
Are they legit? Yeah. Nah, it's probably too early to say that.
Nah, they suck.
Here's your shocker. San Jose 3, Portland 0. We were digging a grave for San Jose last week and the week before and the week before that.
Is that their first multi-goal game of the year?
Yeah, I think it's their first win.
Well, I know it's their first win.
Yeah.
But, I'll tell you what. Portland looks... They look rough. I don't know if you guys watched any of the games this year, but
they were in the final.
Look at both of the teams in the final last year. They're bottom of the table, I think, each of them.
That's true.
And Sunday, Cincinnati won and Sporting won.
Stanek, any comment?
No, not really.
Your favorite, it's Cincy. I thought you'd get all excited.
I mean, I suppose that they could come out with a T-shirt for the game or something.
We got a draw.
The first tie? No, that yeah.
First tie at home, maybe. I don't know.
Are they branding T-shirts for every accomplishment that they have?
Yeah, they've had a T-shirt.
Participation trophies?
They've had a T-shirt for every match so far other than this one. So. But basically, I feel like Cincy is approaching the point in the season where if it starts to go sour, they're going to start chirping about their attendance because that's all they'll have left in typical Orlando fashion. I really think that they're just going to follow the Orlando City story arc where they're going to sign some big-name player who's going to do something cool every 2 weeks, and they're just going to keep retweeting it through their misery of never making the playoffs ever. They're on the path. They're going to start getting really salty about pro referees in like 2 seasons because they're going to run out of people to blame. It's going to be great. But, yeah, I don't think they're very good still.
Okay. Well, I hope they're pretty good because I look forward to the Hell Israel rivalry coming up later this season. And then tomorrow, our opponent on Saturday, Montreal, has to play at D.C., which is kind of weird, a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Any particular reason for that?
They've been saying that in order to reduce the length of the schedule, they're going to start doing more midweek games.
Okay.
But Tuesday is weird. Usually it's a Wednesday or a Thursday. Yeah. Tuesday's a little odd.
All right, well, it's good that they have to play. Let's just slide right into a preview. What do you guys know about Montreal?
Well, the biggest difference maker, of course, is always for Montreal is going to be Piatti. And he's been injured. He's up in the air. Whether or not he's going to play against Columbus on Saturday, he's guaranteed not to be playing tomorrow. But it seems like it's 50-50. So that could be a big one. It's also Montreal's home opener. I know Bart's got some words for that.
Since the season started, and they've been on the road, barnstorming.
Absolutely. So, you know, could be a test. But I really think if Piatti's there, that's going to be a big way to tilt the scales one way or the other.
Okay.
Yeah, and what we've it looks like, at least the last things I was seeing on Twitter, so, you know, take that with a grain of salt, but it sounded like he seems like he's pretty sure thing out for both of these matches. That would obviously be a big boost. But yeah, we were looking at the schedule, you know, during the break, and this is their home opener. They've got one more home game before the beginning of May while Crew are playing, you know, bringing us back to where we were in the second or first segment. Yeah, with all these things. So, again, you know, that's not necessarily a great thing for Montreal, and there's still obviously a lot of struggles with that franchise.
I think they would be really stupid to rush him back. He makes everything work for them the same way that Higuain makes everything work for us. And if he were to be injured in that Columbus game and then be out for months, it would really hurt their season.
Their season would be kaput at that point.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say anybody's season is kaput the way this playoff system is set up, where if you can be halfway decent for even a couple months, you know, you're in trouble. But it would really, really hurt them. And they need all the help they can get right now. They have had a lot of trouble attracting fans. Saputo's been complaining about the money he's been losing every season. I think that's partially why they have so few home games during this early part of the season, is to try to get their attendance numbers up a little bit and to try to put some money there and stop the losses. Without Piatti, they're a different team. And so I think we'll be in decent shape going into that match.
They lost a match 7-1 a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So,
hey, but they bounced back, got a shutout this past week.
All right. Can we get right scoring, though?
Gosh.
Would this be a good opportunity?
I mean, to be able to do it on the road, even against an undermanned Montreal team, you hope so. But MLS is so weird. I mean, in the sense that home teams generally do pretty well, for whatever reason, on the road, teams really struggle. So, you know, if you could pull out a draw, I mean, because that's what you want, 3 points at home, 1 point on the road.
All right, let's go around the room. Let's give our pick for the game. What do you got for a score, fellas?
I'm going to go 1-1.
1-1, all right.
Yeah, I'm also going to do 1-1. I have been to Montreal multiple times expecting to get wins and have never been to an away match in Montreal and seen the Crew win. So they
beautiful
always
seem city, though, right?
Never been there. So beautiful. Yeah. It's really fun, but it's one of those places where we seem to struggle. And so I think we'll be the better team, but I think they're going to nick some sort of stupid goal, and it's going to be 1-1 draw.
Okay.
trying to remember. Was that the game? Is that the game that, you know, a few years back? Did Justin Meerham have his hat trick or one of his better games at Montreal? So it'd be interesting to see if, you know, maybe I don't know that Justin Meerham certainly hasn't played his way back into the starting 11 with the way that Robinho's been playing, and if you're Caleb Porter, I don't think you change a thing. I'd like to think that they've got some more goals come out of them, especially if, you know, Piatti's going to be out of the lineup. I'll go with 2-0.
2-0.
Zach Steffen's going to get that record, yo.
I like us 2-0 as well. I'm going with that. Sam, you got a pick? You're slurping down your soup. 3-1. Crew? All right.
Wow.
Fair enough. All right, a 1 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Then we're back against Portland. That should be interesting.
Absolutely.
Their old coach, Caleb Porter, taking on his former team. Portland Timbers at Moffitt Stadium on April 20th. We will have tickets to give away for that on next week's Massive Report. We could be recording on a different day, depending on... No, it's not going to happen? The guest we were talking about?
It'll be a separate episode.
It'll be a separate episode. I got you. Okay, so we're back here on Monday for sure at Hendox. That's good, because I live here. So I need to know when to come out of my apartment in the back of Hendox and do the Massive Report. That's Mike Kroski. That's Alex Stanek. That's Bart Logan. That's Sam Fombi. I'm Brian Phillips from CD1025. Listen to my radio station. I would appreciate it. CD1025. And the Massive Report, we'd appreciate it if you'd check out 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping and remodeling or even rebuilding your house from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build your next home and your home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Until next week, we'll be back here at Hendox. Go, crew! We'll see you next week on the Massive Report.